celebrando está y vamos a ver quién ganará.
Good morning. My name is Alon Robb, and this is The Playing Field, the show about sports and society. We started the show today with the Gypsy Kings playing their song Oe, Oe, which is about the World Cup of 1998. This show is dedicated to the memory of my father, Israel Tzvi Robb, who played soccer as a young man, kicked the ball with me into his 70s, and up to his recent death at the age of 92, followed the game religiously. In the past 2 weeks, and for another 2 weeks, billions of people all around the world are glued to their TV sets, and they're exhibiting an acute state of soccer fever as they're following such wizards as the Brazilian Ronaldinho, the Englishman Gerrard, and also the fortunes of 32 national teams that are participating in the World Cup held this year in Germany. What is it about the ball and its movement across the pitch with 20 players in hot pursuit making you wonder why don't they give them more balls to play with that attracts so many people around the world and that promoted the French writer Albert Camus to proclaim that everything I know about life I learned from soccer? What is it about this simple game that attracts so many viewers and players, people such as Nelson Mandela, who in his memoirs wrote about playing soccer on the Robben Island prison grounds, as well as Osama bin Laden, who apparently dreams a lot about soccer matches and winning them against his enemies? And of course, what is it that attracts kids all over the world and adults playing in shanty towns, kicking a ball made out of rags? In order to solve this mystery, or maybe create some new mysteries, I am joined in the studio today by two guests who are very familiar with various soccer cultures. And in about 10 to 12 minutes, I will open the phone lines, and the listeners are welcome to call in. Our number here is 503-231-8187. And if you could share some of your World Cup stories, some of your soccer stories, games you played in, games you watched. And I would especially encourage listeners who come from other countries, perhaps less known in the United States, but important soccer nations, to call us and share their stories. My guests today are Sevi Ghosh and Jack Boas. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Morning.
Thanks for coming to the show today. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what you do in Portland, your connection to soccer. Maybe we'll start with you, Sevi.
Well, I'm the new services manager for the north and northeast of Portland, for Portland Parks and Recreation. So basically in charge of all the parks, facilities, and programs that serve the 170,000 people or so in the north and northeast.
And you grew up, you were born in India?
I was born in India, grew up in Zambia, Africa, and have lived in the States, mainly in Iowa, in the Midwest, for the last 25 years or so.
Okay, Jack?
Yes, my name is Jack Boas, and I grew up in Holland, and I've been living in the Portland area for about the last 10 years or so, and I teach at BCC, at Rock Creek, as well as Linfield.
And you teach European history and
European
Holocaust.
History, right.
And Holocaust studies. Sevi, growing up in Zambia, what are some of your first soccer memories?
Well, going to the stadium to watch our local team, which is very well known in the southern part of Africa, called Mufulira Wanderers, and it's got a historic significance in that part of Africa, and just watching them play and win, that was very good. And also to put in a word for our great soccer commentator, Dennis Liwewe. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the BBC World Service Sports Roundup from Africa, you remember the name Dennis Liwewe. And he's still very alive, very strong, you know, he's still doing his soccer mm-hmm. broadcast. And to see his emotional fever during some of the Zambia games that were very close in the early 70s, you know, was very fun to listen to and watch. So.
And how do people view soccer over there? Is it well integrated into society? Does everyone talk about it, play it?
Absolutely. Soccer is part of society. I mean, that's the daily talk at work, in school, at play, and so on. Yeah.
In some of the African nations, soccer was important in the struggle for independence, with some well-known soccer players joining the resistance movement, some matches becoming an opportunity to showcase that resistance. Was that the case in Zambia or in other countries you're familiar with?
Yeah, in fact, in Zambia, very much so, because the team I mentioned, Mufulira Wanderers, was the first pure African team, a black African team, to go down to southern Rhodesia, because in those days it used to be the Confederation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland, and was the first team to go down to southern Rhodesia to Salisbury in those days, which is Harare now, and win the trophy and bring it back to an independent Zambia. So that was a big event. And that's why Mufulira Wanderers is in the historical lower in Zambia. So.
Okay, I'll get back to you in a few minutes.
Sure.
Jack, you hail from the Netherlands. Can you tell us about how the sport is, what's its importance in the Netherlands? How did you play it? When did you play it?
Well, it's all important in the Netherlands because the Netherlands is a small country. And, you know, lost a colonial empire. There's not a whole lot to get excited about anymore. And so the soccer team is one of the things that really gets people excited. But the great majority of people watch it at home as well as in squares, public squares. And all you see in Holland during the World Cup and European Cup is orange shirts like I'm wearing right now, but nobody else can see but you guys. I started playing soccer for as long as I've been playing for as long as I know, but I know that the team that I supported from very early on, because my parents did, or my father, was Ajax, or Ajax, I guess, with a lot of different connotation here. But Ajax, so I remember going to the games and, you know, standing during the entire games because my father just dumped me there to stand rather than go and get a high-priced seat. But so that was the team, really, that we followed. You know, and I've been following ever since.
The Netherlands, as you said, plays in orange and is in honor of William of Orange, I assume.
Yeah, it's the the House of Orange is the royal house, and it's been around for hundreds of years. So that's the color connotation.
And for a small country, the Netherlands has done pretty well in the World Cup. Can you tell us about some of its successes in the past?
Well, the trauma that's still plaguing the Dutch is the fact that they lost in 1974 to the Germans, 2-1. And like I said, it's something that they just can't get over, even to this day. They've had many successes, especially in outsourcing players. I don't know what makes a small country like that. Maybe it's because it's very wet and have a lot of fields. And it's hard to explain why the soccer culture produces fine coaches, four of the current coaches in the World Cup, hail from Holland. So, you know, it's flat, for one thing, the country. So that yeah, really helps in soccer. Yeah.
I come from Israel, and we have a long memory of trauma stretching back 2,000 years, but not so much about soccer. I'm talking here in the studio with Seve Ghosh and with Jack Boas, and our show is about the World Cup. And in a few minutes, we'll open the phone lines. Our number is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And if you have a story about the World Cup or your country where you might come from, that would be great. I want to talk a little bit more about why the sport is so popular all over the world and why it's not so popular in the United States so much. But since we have a caller, let's go to the caller right now. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for calling. Would you like to say something about soccer, any particular soccer nation?
Well, I'm from Brazil, and I don't know about soccer being popular. And I can say why perhaps soccer is popular in Brazil, and I think one of the biggest reasons is that it's a very simple game in a way. You don't need much stuff. You don't need anything. And since it's most of the population is pretty poor, you can just get a ball and go play on the streets, on the beach with, you know, friends. And there is a very natural way of playing without too much prop. And even when they don't have a ball, they get a rock and wrap it with cloth. And that's the ball. And so things are done pretty naturally, and they grow up like that, and it becomes, I don't know, a passion and a possibility. And for poor people, it's also a way of getting out of poverty. So there is this amount of, as a friend of mine says, of desperation that makes it pretty successful.
And is the game popular also among women or just men? Or is it
mostly men? Mostly men. I think now women are starting to play more, but it's not on the same level, not at all. So some friendly games you have some women that come in, and especially if there's a charity event or something like that. But mostly it's a sport for men. Still.
And did you grow up following the game, playing it? What do you remember as a kid? Did you follow the teams of the 70s, 80s?
Well, I was a little girl by then when the big, nice team of the 70s was there. So I actually, unfortunately, don't remember as much from that. But I remember hearing, listening to the radio, and also there's always a game going on, so all the narration, you know, the time when radio was still a big thing. I remember that, and I remember the big games like Fla-Flu, Flamengo and Fluminense, which was a classic in Rio, where I come from. These were huge, and I remember, since I lived close by, I remember the throngs of people, you know, the masses and everything. That was a big event. You know, Maracanã at the time was still in its full capacity, which was 200,000 people, and it was full. So I remember that.
Okay, and I'll ask you this question, and also maybe our guests could answer. Why are the Brazilians so good in soccer? Why have they won the World Cup 5 times? Is it just that God is a Brazilian, or what is it?
Well, sometimes God is Brazilian, yes, at least for that. it kind of forgets us in many other areas. But, well, as I said, it's something that every little kid grows up with. You know, the first thing they get when they are born is a ball, and they start it. So it's, playing ball is almost as natural as walking, so that's the thing. And it's something that the poor people, the little man, does and loves and is comfortable with. Or at least was. I know more and more it becomes an issue of market as everything else. Yeah. So it's become a big, horrible, I don't know.
Commercialized.
Okay,
so, I'll ask the same question to you, Sevi.
I think Brazil does so well because they know how to win. I think even if they're in trouble, they somehow find a way to put the ball in the back of the net. And I think that comes from what the lady is talking about, also about all the instinctive soccer that the kids learn on the beach or in the barrio. You know, that's where the soccer is, you know, and that's why if you look at a Brazilian player and another player from another country, I mean, the what I call is how you make the ball your friend, you know, how the ball sticks to your body, you know, as you're running along. And there's a huge difference from watching a player from another country compared to a Brazilian with the ball. It's two different things, you know.
So, maybe it's a samba.
Yeah.
Yes. If I may add to that, I think that's one of the things I see very differently really from Brazil, which is Brazil, this goes through many stereotypes, but I feel that it's like dancing and samba and soccer. You have to have hips. You have to have rhythm. You have to have pace. And the ability with the ball is ability of moving your body and moving your hips and, you know, playing with it, enjoying it, and having art. And that's what Brazil does. And that's what makes us happy about our soccer. And that's, I think, what the world likes about it, too, because there's beauty. And I think I don't know what it is precisely, but you grow with this, with the music, and you know how to dance with a ball.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we have another caller. Good morning, caller.
Is that me now, I think?
Yes, that's you.
Hi there, Mr.
Hi.
Rob. Well, I guess my memories are kind of somewhat brief, but I think the first memory that I have actually is of the 1958 when I think I was about 8 or 9 years old.
When they played in Sweden.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I remember the 5-2 final that Brazil won, and one of the most probably highly scoring tournaments ever. But I remember that that was the first time I actually had an idol, and that was Garrincha.
I love Garrincha. Can you tell the viewer, the listeners, a little bit about who this Garrincha is, which means little bird?
Exactly, little bird, from what I understand in Portuguese. And, yeah, he was the winger for Brazil, and reportedly he had one leg that was about an inch shorter, or 2 inches shorter than the other one. I never got official medical information on that, but that's what they said. And ostensibly, after Georgie Best, he may have been possibly the second best dribbler of all times.
And where do you come from?
I was born in Jerusalem, and I moved here in the 1970s. But for many, many years, every time they had a World Soccer Cup, I used to go back to Jerusalem in order to watch the games live. Again, since up till several years ago, there was really not much that was covered here by way of TV. So it was the best kind of time to actually connect with the soccer world by going back to there.
And Israel made it to the World Cup only once, 1970. I remember as a kid in Israel, we were doing a school play endlessly, but I snuck in a little transistor so I could listen to the games. Thank you so much, caller. We have another caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. I'm a fanatic. I love soccer. I was introduced to it in 1963 when I left the country to go to college and discovered soccer. I was in Mexico. I was at the university, and they had a huge stadium, and the games were incredible. And it was so exciting to watch, as opposed to the football here and the baseball here, which I find extremely boring to watch. I have a bumper sticker that says, "Real football is played with your feet." I'm the mother of a soccer fanatic. He has his own rugby team. He plays soccer. He follows, he's a Timber fan and follows the Timbers around. I can't explain why there's so much done with the body, like the previous lady said. It's it's like a dance. It's like music. There's so much skill in playing, and it's so simple. You just have your feet and you have the ball, and I think it's fascinating. NPR did had a small short program on why it was so boring and how could anyone ever want to watch it, as opposed to baseball and the football played here. And I feel just the opposite. There's so little used that it's actually a real skilled kind of sport. I have a Grundig radio, and I get all the foreign countries, and when I turn it on the weekends, the only thing I can get are soccer games. It is just a worldwide sport. And my son was in the Oregonian in the metro section, because while jumping up and down at a Timbers game, and the Timbers, unfortunately, are the other end of what the Brazilian teams are. They're excellent, and the Timbers have not been too excellent. But he does follow them around. He goes up to Canada when they play there. He just follows them.
And if you want to watch the World Cup, thanks to Sevi, we could watch it together. Can you tell us a little bit about...
We do have the live broadcast on huge projections at St. John's Community Center in Spanish and Matt Dishman Community Center in English. And it's all free. You know, it is totally free. People still ask it if it's free, and it is totally free. You just come in. Game times for the next 2 weeks will be probably 7 a.m. and 12 noon. Just show up, and you enjoy the camaraderie with the people that are there. Doesn't matter which team you support, it's all fun and games, and just to watch
it on the radio, because it's just fascinating to watch.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And somebody wanted to know if you could bring food or drink, or
you
could starve.
You could bring your own things. We also have food offerings there, especially at St. John's. There's a church group that's been feeding the people there for free, again, because they have members from different countries, and they've been cooking up foods from those represented countries in the World Cup. And giving us offerings of a taste of food from different countries also. So that's another thing to try out.
The spectators get so involved at the university. After the games, the whole stadium would unload down into the field, and I've never seen anything like it.
Right.
Sometimes it was a little ugly, but most of the time it was just, they were just so excited because one team had won that most of the people in the stadium were rooting for. It's a fantastic sport. My son has at the on the top of his head tooth marks from jumping up and down at a soccer game, and the fellow above him was jumping up and down, and he was had just shaved his head, and so he ended up with tooth marks in his head. And he went home on light rail, was bleeding quite profusely, didn't care, didn't notice. He just was so excited because the game was great. And some lady reporter from the Oregonian said, "Did you know that your head is bleeding?" He said, "No." And she wrote an article about the fanatics of soccer, the Timber fanatics. But the games that are being played right now in the World Cup are just far superior to
and,
what the Timbers do.
If you're interested in more soccer besides the viewing and playing, starting next week I'll be teaching a class at Portland State University, a four-credit class for 4 weeks. It's a sociology of soccer, and we have a lot of literature. We have great guests, and we also play the game. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, thank you. I think we have another caller. Okay, not right now. So I'll ask back to our guests, and our number again is 503-231-8187 if you'd like to talk about soccer. Jack, why is the game so popular all over the world, but in the United States, it's even though it's gaining in popularity, it's not as popular. Do you have any theories?
I'm fairly pessimistic about how about soccer's future in the United States. I don't think really it will ever catch on as a major sport. Part of it is xenophobia, I believe. It's associated with foreigners. Part of it is low scoring, which I think it's its beauty, but Americans like to pile on the score. And, you know, basketball games go over 100, you know, it's nothing unusual. But I sort of, those are some of the reasons I think the game is not very popular. It gets a very bad press. If you look at the Oregonian today, you'll find that soccer is relegated, which is the world's biggest event sporting-wise. But it's relegated to the inside pages, the sport pages. So I think that has a lot to do with it. There's just this animus towards soccer in this country, which I personally believe will never, unless we create a major, major star, because that's the star system. This is American as apple pie. So I think soccer has a long way to go in this country.
Yeah. What about you, Seppi? Do you agree? I mean,
I agree with that, and I think I'll add to that that it's also not on television. Kids grow up sitting in front of the television, and if you don't have quality soccer games on TV, then, you know, you're hard pressed to play soccer on instinct. I mean, I think American players play by being coached. They don't play with instinct. So it's like trying to learn baseball from a Russian coach. I would not want to do that. You know, I would want to learn baseball from an American coach, you know. Same thing with soccer. If you want to improve the soccer, I think we need to get to the next level, at least in the youth level. I mean, we have a lot of parents that mean well. They want to coach kids. But I think if you want to improve the quality and the level of soccer, I think you have to get some other soccer people from other countries involved in the soccer development.
But with all the millions of kids playing, it seems like in 10, 20 years, you know, they'll be adults. You would imagine that they'll want to follow the game.
But then the choice comes when it comes to money, you know, when there's a professional level or the level where they can make a choice of playing for a sport that they can make a living in. You know, soccer does not give you that opportunity. I think baseball, football, even if you're on the bench, you're making thousands of dollars, whereas in soccer you might barely make a living in this country.
Well, so. Okay, if I may just add just one.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think the U.S. produce a lot of good players.
Right.
I think there are leagues where they do get good coaching, and you know, you see that they can play with the top teams, but they have a problem finishing around the net. You know, they're not very good at putting the ball in net, and they need to become more robust, stronger. You look at the European teams, they seem much stronger physically and so forth.
Right.
So I think there's a long way to go.
And soccer has become a very physical sport now.
Yes.
Very much so. Yeah.
Okay, we could continue this debate for a long time. We have just time for one last caller. You have about 3 minutes, so good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. I liken the World Cup soccer to kind of untainted Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
The World Cup soccer has gone on for years and years, mm-hmm. and it's a more of an honor to win the World Cup for your country.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in America, I think the sports are more of a deterrent to hold attention and focus away from things that would normally be focused on if those were not present. The focus and attention and energy and money that is spent towards the American sports is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a major industry, obviously.
It is. It is. And I wonder what the people that are actually so devoted to the sports of America would be doing with their money and energy and focus if those weren't there.
And you're following the games, the World Cup? Have you been following it? And
No. I'm just calling you on your on your program, and you. I guess the question was why it's so such a popular sport, and why it's not so popular here.
Okay. Thank you so much. And in the last minute, I'd like to ask both our guests, who are the teams to watch in the World Cup? Who are you rooting for? Start with you, Jack.
Okay, well, obviously, I'm rooting for two teams, U.S. And the Netherlands, of course, with the Netherlands getting my preference by a slight nod.
Yeah. Okay, and
Jack may not like me here, but I'm rooting for Argentina. I've always rooted for Argentina since 1982, since I followed soccer on a different level. And I think the U.S. should have a good, strong game against Ghana tomorrow morning. But Ghana, you know, being from Africa too, I'm going with Ghana to beat the U.S. tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes. I think Africa needs this. I think this will be a big boost for soccer in Africa. So. Yeah. So I'm going with that.
And I always root for the underdogs, so I was rooting for Trinidad and Tobago. Now they're out, so I guess I root for Ghana.
There you go.
It's almost time to wrap it up. I would like to thank our guests, Sevi Ghosh of the Portland Park Bureau and Jack Boas for coming. Thank you also all the callers. And I'd like to end with a short passage from a wonderful book by Eduardo Galeano, Football in Sun and Shadow. And he writes about how today often the game has become mechanized, even though the last World Cup, the current World Cup, is pretty exciting. But he writes that luckily on the field you could still see, even if only once in a long while, some insolent rascal who sets aside the script and commits a blunder of dribbling past the entire opposing side, the referee and the crowd in the stands, all for the carnal delight of embracing the forbidden adventure of freedom. Thank you. And see you on the playing fields.
The 14th Annual Good in the Neighborhood Multicultural Music and Food Festival beginning at 12 noon on Saturday and Sunday, June 24th and 25th. The event is located at King School Park at 4815 Northeast 7th Avenue next to King Elementary School. The festival kicks off with an annual community parade at 11 a.m. on Saturday from the Emmanuel Hospital parking lot and features 2 days of fun, music, food, and festival. The musical performers include Linda Hornbuckle Band, Patrick Lamb, Norman Sylvester Band, Andy Stokes, Ocean 503, and much more. For more information, log on to www.goodintheneighborhood.org. Or call 503-282-1288.